Hey, everybody, this is Adam Alexander from NASCAR on Fox. You're listening to the Front Stretch Podcast with Brian Nolan.
Hello, beautiful people. It is the 12th of September, the week of September the 12th, I should say. There's only one person locked into the playoffs, which means Bristol is going to be crazy. And this program begins now. What's going on? Yours truly, you know my name by now, Mr. Brian Timothy Dale Nolan. On this program, we got a little bit of a special twist for you. Due to Bristol week, we talked with this guy's driver, Parker Kligerman, at Sonoma, and he said if we win at Bristol, it would be like winning the Daytona 500. So we're going to get Parker Kligerman's crew chief, Chris Carrier. He's going to be on the program. We'll be talking about just his history. He's been every single series, Cup, Xfinity, Trucks, ARCA, K&N, every single which way. I mean, this guy won 9 races with Parker Kligerman in one season combined in the ARCA series back in 2009. So we're just going to get his take on just everything that he has been through. We're going to get his take on what it's like being at Henderson Motorsports and what Parker Kligerman is really like behind the scenes. Last but not least, my man, one of the absolute dogs in Front Stretch, Mr. Mike Bachman. He is the absolute dog when we talk with him every few weeks. We're going to be recapping Kansas, previewing the unpredictability that we have at Bristol coming up, and so much more. So we got a lot to talk about and a little bit of time to do so. So let's wave this green flag.
Boogity, boogity, boogity. Let's go racing,
green
boys.
Green flag is out. Green flag is out. I just see him laughing, my friend. I see him laughing. Mr. Mike Bachman joins the program here. Bachman, what's going on, my friend? We were talking beforehand that the fall is just about to arrive, which is my favorite time of the year. Football is in full effect. I know you've been watching. You had half your brain on football, half on NASCAR on Sunday. What's going on, buddy? How you doing, bro?
Brian, great to be here with you as always, my friend. And yeah, couldn't agree with you more. It's an absolute awesome time for the sports world with college football. The NFL season now in full swing. You got the NASCAR playoffs. The IndyCar season just wrapped up. Congratulations to Mr. Will Power on his second IndyCar championship. And then, of course, baseball. September's here. We're getting into the road of October. I mean, just so much going on, dude. We've only got two eyes, but thank God we got so many screens. We can catch up with everything. But always great to be here with you, man. Excited to talk Kansas. And then, of course, preview this Bristol night race, man.
For those that don't know, I will be going to Bristol for frontstretch.com. And Bachman, I've been to a lot of races covering them. Only one or two has been more or as excited as I am this weekend. One was my first ever Daytona 500. And then the second one's probably just the inaugural Clash event, just because it was brand new and it was unprecedented and everything. And then Daytona's Daytona. I mean, let's be honest, bro. But this Bristol race is absolutely incredible. 15 drivers not locked in. Pandemonium could be happening. It's going to be beaten. It's going to be banging. We're going to be diving into that in just a little bit. Let's flip it, though, back a little bit about a few days ago when this all comes out, in which for the second straight week, first time in playoffs history in the world of NASCAR that two non-playoff drivers won the first two races in the start of the NASCAR playoffs. Eric Jones won last week, and then Bubba Wallace winning this week. This past week, I should say, at Kansas, locks the 45 group into the owners' playoff, into their round of 8. First and foremost, Bachman, well-deserved. This is not a fuel mileage. This is not a super speedway. This was not a rain-shortened race. Bubba Wallace did this on speed. He did this on coming out of a great green flag pit stop and persevered, held off his boss slash kind of co-teammate in Denny Hamlin. They do share an alliance with JGR, and he flat out just beat them. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. This was Bubba Wallace's big time win, and it happened at Kansas.
Absolutely. No unusual circumstances, no shenanigans, none of that. This was a straight up, genuine, authentic win from Bubba Wallace. And, you know, are you surprised? If you look at this race, just in a race lens, you really shouldn't be. Bubba Wallace, this team had one of the fastest cars of the day, was one of the top Toyotas. And like you said, Brian, was able to control that last green flag run, put himself in position, led 58 laps of this race, which is the most in a single race for Bubba that he has led. So for him to kind of put this together, especially with the roller coaster season that this team had, and especially now driving that 45 and running for the owner's championship there, this gives them a lot of momentum. This gives them a lot of positivity. And for Bubba himself, the one thing that we always talk about is his demeanor, his personality. We've seen it, all the heartbreak from a lot of these races and a lot of these finishes, where whether it's been his team, whether it's been him himself not being able to close the deal, get the job done. Well, now he finally is able to get it in victory lane. And honestly, Brian, we could finally put his first win. Like, your first win means everything. Of course it does. It doesn't matter how it's won. It's your first win. And that's always going to be one of the most important ones, one of the most sentimental ones that you do win. But for us, it's just almost a breath of fresh air to finally get Talladega off the front lines, kind of put it on the back burner and focus on this, because it was a complete race, drove a fast car, and did what he needed to do to hold off his boss and park it in victory lane. So not really surprised. Like, yes, we do have the second non-playoff driver to open these playoffs, which is just another narrative that is insane in its own right. But for Bubba himself in this race in particular, not terribly surprised that he's standing in victory lane, especially considering this is the second time this year that that 45 car is parked in Kansas victory lane. So happy for Bubba Wallace, and definitely a big confidence booster for that entire team as a whole.
Happy for him as well. And it just, it shows how much this 23-11 team is growing. Two times for 58 laps, Wallace led en route to a second career victory. A couple other notable names, Alex Bowman, four times for 107 laps, ended in fourth after a dreadful, and I mean absolutely dreadful, summer in which we didn't even know what the status of his playoffs was going to look like. It looks like he will, without any catastrophe happening up on Saturday, will end up making the round of 12. One last thing on the Bubba thing. I've said for many, many months now, there's no way we're going to get to 16 winners. Well, we got there, and guess what? We're going more and more and more. We're at 18 now. So with you saying a straight face, Bachman, could anyone have expected this? Because I certainly didn't. And there's a good chance that we could get to 20, because Ryan Blaney still hasn't won and Martin Truex Jr. still hasn't won.
No, nobody expected it. And if you did, then tweet us at Front Stretch on Twitter, because I need you to write my next lottery ticket.
I'll give you a follow, and I'll need you to get me some scratch numbers.
My man, I mean, the fact that we're here, because you said it, you hit the nail on it. All we've talked about is the potential of getting to 16 winners. Now we're at 18. And Brian, with eight races to go, we still got some time here, man. We still got 2 months of the season left before the championship race. We got to start thinking about if we're getting to 20, because you named two big time names right there, Martin Truex Jr., Ryan Blaney, two guys that we still expect to get into victory lane that should. And we still got some wild card races on the schedule. We still got the Roval, where you could see a Michael McDowell or another potential road course ace come in there. You still got Talladega, which we all know the chaos that surrounds Talladega, especially in today's NASCAR. So there is still a lot of opportunity for so many different drivers to come away and steal these wins. And that's exactly what they're going to do. So you got to start really thinking about if we're going to get to 20 different winners. I mean, I don't know the record off the top of my head of the most amount of winners we've had in a single season of NASCAR. But I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago in my final thoughts segment on the podcast, is just the fact that we need to just soak in this moment, because we don't know what the future holds for the next gen car. We expect that years down the line, we're going to start seeing teams starting to really figure this car out. You're going to probably start to see a little bit of separation from the big dogs compared to a lot of those other maybe smaller teams that don't have those in-house resources that is going to put them over the top, right? So we don't know if we're going to be getting 16 different winners every single year. This could just be a crazy circumstance. And if it is, we just have to soak in this moment and take it all in, because it is one of the most historic seasons that, I mean, we've ever seen in our lifetime. And we don't know if we're going to be getting that again. But the fact that we're here at 18 winners, breeding chaos, we really got to start thinking about if we're going to get to 20. And quite honestly, Brian, it's looking like we're going to get there.
You're completely right. It definitely looks like we're going to get there. And just looking at here, if you're just joining us, this is the Front Stretch Podcast with Brian Nolan, Mike Bachman co-hosting with me on this September 12th week of edition of the program. Bachman, last but not least on this race in Kansas, we had some comers and goers. Tyler Reddick looked like he was going to be contending for the win. He cuts a tire. His day's done. Harvick gets into the wall. It looks like it's going to be a must win for him. Overall, your overall thoughts on this before we dive into the playoff picture and then our interview.
Yeah, just a number of playoff drivers, like you said, dealing with their own individual issues. Kevin Harvick, who looked like he was going to have a top 10 car on the day, needed to put together a good race, especially after what happened at Darlington, the fire taking him out. So, like you said, now virtually in a must-win situation heading to Bristol. Tyler Reddick, who started on the pole, was my pick to win. Unfortunately, cuts a tire, and then his day is done. And then Kyle Busch even. Kyle Busch looked like he had a top 10 car, showed a lot of speed, coming away with a 26th place finish. He's right there on the playoff bubble as well, heading to a track that he's had so much success at and, of course, won the dirt race earlier in the spring. But yeah, this was a race that we had comers and goers from the playoffs. I do just want to shout out Denny Hamlin, now 2-for-2 and runner-up finishes for the round of 16. He right now is probably the playoff favor, in my opinion. Talked to Jared Haas about this yesterday in our post-race conversation, which is available on the Front Stretch YouTube channel if you haven't checked that out already. But Hamlin, Christopher Bell, also the only driver locked into the round of 12. So nobody's safe heading into Bristol. Like, we talk about Chase Elliott. We talked about Chase Elliott having this buffer of playoff points. And now he could potentially be on the outs heading into Bristol.
Kyle Larson.
Yeah, Kyle Larson as well. All these big time names that we just naturally expect to make it to the round of eight to be there in the championship. You know, that narrative's out the window right now, brother. And speaking of just those Hendrick guys, you mentioned Alex Bowman. What an absolute run for him. An atrocious summer. They don't call it the dog day summer or nothing. And then, of course, you got Greg Ives, who's stepping down from the pit box this year, trying to salvage something, put Greg Ives out on top, maybe get another win, but trying at least, you know, salvage as much of a playoff run as you can. So a big day for the 48 team. I certainly rid them off amid that summer stretch and finally putting together back-to-back top 10 finishes. Hopefully they can carry this momentum maybe in the next round if they're fortunate enough. But we'll be talking about the playoffs. We'll be talking about these drivers because a lot of implications for many of them, and none of them are safe except for Christopher Bell heading into probably what's going to be the most chaotic race of the year.
Like you said, Christopher Bell, the only one locked in. William Byron, Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, all 40 above. Bowman and Blaney are all 30 above. And then you get kind of the kind of good, kind of not Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Ross Chastain, 26, 27, 28. And then you go from 10 below. Daniel Suarez is only 6 above. Tyler Reddick and Austin Cindric only 2 above. Look, listen to these names below the cut line, Bachman. Kyle Busch, 2 behind the cut line, Austin Dillon 3, Chase Briscoe 9, and Kevin Harvick. You have 2 champions that could be eliminated after the first round. This could be an absolute incredible night race at Bristol just because of the potential consequences of what happens, because you got 2 champions of the sport, 2 absolute dogs in Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick that potentially could get eliminated before the round of 8 even begins.
Yeah, that is very true. But if Kevin Harvick has taught, Kevin Harvick specifically, if he's taught us anything, this guy goes on a 60 plus race winless streak and then wins twice in a row. We know him. They don't call him the closer for nothing. And we're going to a track where he has a ton of success at. And like I said, too, Kyle Busch as well, 2 veterans that have won championships in this playoff system, know how it works, know how to get it done. Kevin Harvick obviously is in the worst situation of these guys, but I look at a guy like Austin Dillon, even in his post-race interview coming out of Kansas, he's just like, yep, you know, we feel good. -3, like so many of these guys on this list are just in danger. And it takes one accident. It takes one blown tire. It takes one engine failure, suspension, what have you, to take them out of their chance. So the intensity is going to be amped up and we're going to be in for a hell of a race. That's for sure.
Bachman, stay right there, brother. Let's take a little bit. But when we come back, we're going to be playing an interview that I conducted a little bit ago with the crew chief of the number 75 truck, Mr. Chris Carrier. Before we dive into our interview, Mr. Bachman, I know that you are a big fan of sporting events, so let's just give a great shout out to our friends at SeatGeek.com, your place for tickets for concerts, sporting events, and more. You know, Bachman, you can get $20 off your first purchase by using the code FRONTSTRETCH at checkout. Just use FRONTSTRETCH for $20 off. Once again, that is at SeatGeek.com, your ticket place for concerts, sporting events, and more. Now, here's our interview with the crew chief of the number 75 truck, Chris Carrier.
Right now, folks, at this time, I'm going to bring in the program. He is the crew chief of the number 75 truck. We had his driver on the week after Sonoma, and he told us that winning at Bristol would be the Daytona 500 of wins for his team. So we decided, hey, I think we should have his crew chief on. So Chris Carrier, the crew chief of the number 75 truck, joins the Front Stretch podcast. Chris, thank you so much for coming on. How you doing, man? It's got a big weekend coming up for you guys.
Thank you for having me. Doing great. It's a beautiful day here, and we're in Abingdon, Virginia, which is about 25 minutes northeast of Bristol Speedway. Beautiful day. It's supposed to be beautiful weather this week. Hopefully, knock on wood, no chance of rain, and plenty of sunshine, and you know, fall was coming. So anyway, great day. I'm doing great. Can't wait for tomorrow night truck race at Bristol. We put a lot of preparation in, still putting preparation in, but we're down to the last you know, sand and gravel of getting ready to go and load up and haul on down there sometime late this evening and go in tomorrow and try to tackle that great Coliseum and see if we can come away with a trophy.
Now, this will be my first trip to Bristol. So what's that feeling like when you go into the tunnel at Bristol? Just how different is it than any other racetrack?
I think it's a deal where you go in and it's like, I mean, I hate to try to make it simpler than what it is, but it is. It's just like a great big 2020s Coliseum. it's a half mile racetrack, and the fact that it's all concrete, you know, is a little different. But even when it was asphalt, you see the high banks. And you realize that, like, man, okay, first of all, this is a place where cars go really fast around a half-mile racetrack. And then you notice, you say, okay, this is going to be pretty tight. And getting into the corner and corner exit is, you know, things happen quick. And then you look up and you're surrounded by, you know, 160,000 seats, you know, and just rows and rows and rows of seats. And suites and press boxes and so on and so forth. It's pretty overwhelming. You know, I think you're going to feel that when you go in. It's, and for a person like myself, that's old enough that I can remember when they had, probably enough seats for about, 8,000 people if it was packed full. It was concrete grandstands on both sides of the straightaway, nothing in either corner, and there was probably, oh, I don't know, maybe 25 rows of concrete grandstands on each side, and like I say, packed full, it was 28,000 people, and some people sitting on the banks, grass banks on each end of the, you know, and seeing that many years ago and seeing where it's grown to now and what it is just, I don't know. It's just pretty overwhelming. And I'm from this area. I grew up about a mile and a half from Bristol Speedway, up until the time I moved out when I got married in the late 80s. And, seeing all the changes that went on down through the years in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and then 2000s, of the on the property and the speedway itself and the grandstands and parking lots and this and that and other. It's just, it's really kind of like, it's almost, it's just, it's overwhelming just to think what all, where it was and where it is now. And to know that, I know the first time I ever was involved in a Saturday night cup race, August cup race at, back then it was August, you know, at Bristol and being, you know, packed house. And it was just like a, it was just like an electric fence. Man, it's just like standing 2 inches from a hot electric fence all the way around you and watching, you know, 500 lap races and knowing how tough it was on the drivers as well as the pit crews. And the fans never, you know, they never really calmed down. They went into the last half lap or last corner sometimes. And to see the, see who won. And I don't know. It's just a, it's, I've been to a lot of racetracks, a lot of races. Seen a lot of types of races, been around a lot of race drivers and different type of race cars and stuff. I've been doing this 47 years since I was a kid.
Wow.
And I've just never seen anything to, in my mind, to equal it. And we're a local hometown team. We're you know, we're the only top three series team, NASCAR top three series team close in this area, and a lot of people follow us just because of that. And it's, for everybody that's involved in this race team, it's our friends, it's our old schoolmates, people we've worked with, people we've been around, people we've been neighbors with and go to church with and this, that, and other, you know, for years. And you know they're pulling for you and they're watching and they're hoping. And you know, it's just a really special, very cool weekend for us, week and weekend and event. You know, we look forward to it. We mark it on the calendar. It is our Super Bowl, no doubt. And you know, it's a good time. We pay attention to the whole weekend, all the races, you know. And we're you know, not involved, I guess, with Xfinity or Cup, but we're right there looking and watching and knowing and feeling how those teams, what they're going through. And you know, it's just kind of a cool time of year for us.
Chris Carrier, crew chief for the number 75 truck, joins the Front Stretch podcast. Chris, you mentioned that you've been in the sport for a long time, and you were with Parker Kligerman back in 2009 when you guys won 9 races together in the ARCA series. So just how did that relationship start with Parker, and how has it evolved throughout the years?
Well, I was at Penske Racing, and I was hired there to start as crew chief on a cup team for Sam Hornish. And that was 2008, and that wasn't going very well. So they moved me off that, and they put me eventually on, okay, we want you to be over this driver development program we've got, a relationship with the ARCA team, Cunningham Motorsports, which was housed out of somewhere in Georgia. And it was the basis, the approach was, the goal was to try to find, you know, maybe the next young driver coming up and see, okay, put them in something that, you know, start them in ARCA series, which at that time still does, you know, runs a lot of the same racetracks that the Cup Series does, and just see how things go, see if there's any potential there, see if there's somebody that might be a someday a Cup driver on Sundays. And anyway, I remember going to a road course in New Jersey that was brand new. They hadn't really even got grass in the infield yet, and it was the ARCA race. And went up there, and there was two Cunningham teams, and also Parker drove a third team that was just kind of, you know, last-minute thing, throw together, you know. But I didn't know who he was. I'd heard his name and knew he was from Connecticut. And I watched that weekend and knew that, okay, this guy's something special. And I remember telling Mike Nelson, who is now over the Cup Series at Penske Racing. I think he was vice president then, or competition director or whatever. I said, this is a guy we need to be looking at. And it kind of started from there. The next season, we ended up running a full ARCA schedule and this combination of stuff that Cunningham Motorsports had. There was a couple of older Cup cars that we used out of Penske Racing that were in the back room, good cars. And we just kind of put it all together. They hired a couple of people, a couple of guys that out of the Georgia team to work at Penske Racing in Mooresville with me. And anyway, it just started, and I knew right from the get go. I said, okay, this young man's special. At the time, he was just 17, turning 18, so he was kind of a kind of a stringy headed kid, skinny and a school kid. And but I knew there was something there. I could tell it because he was way too natural not to have that talent, and when I really knew that he was really something special is when we went to the two dirt races on the ARCA schedule, which were I think in September, last August, 1st of September, about this time of year. He had never run anything on dirt. He had never seen a dirt race, never been to a dirt track of any type. And I remember asking him, I said, have you ever driven on a dirt road? He said, man, I live in Connecticut. There aren't any dirt roads. And I'm like, oh my God, we are in big time trouble. And he ended up winning both races. And those are on flat 1 mile dirt racetracks, Springfield and DeCoin, that are actually horse racetracks. Wow. And so this wasn't easy. There was no way really to prepare for it. And we didn't do any testing. We didn't go practice. We just went. And he ended up winning both of those races. And that, down deep in my mind, I said, okay, this guy's not just the next pretty good driver. He's something else. And from that point, we kind of, not to my liking or his either, we kind of got separated a little bit because they directed him a different path than me. And we kind of got separated there for a while. We always kept in touch. Parker's always been one of my best friends, and I think he'll say that about me. Well, we had a lot of trust, and lo and behold, here, 10, well, not quite 10 years later, we started, he came and drove a truck team here that I worked for at Henderson Racing, and here we are, 5-6 years after that, and we're still together and doing okay. We think in the middle of still building a competitive race team here, and we've got good stuff. We've got great owners. We've got great support. We've got a great group of people, and things are just kind of hoochie coochie. And we're fixing to go to Bristol and run our favorite race tomorrow night. He's on his way up here as we speak, and going to sign some autographs tonight and be around. And anyway, it's just a, we have, I think, between he and I, as far as crew chief driver relationship, we've talked about it a lot. I think we have something that's hard to find, and that's it's pretty much a complete trust, in one another. He knows what I'm about. I know what he's about. I can read him. He can read me. We don't fight and argue. We don't point fingers. We don't blame. There's none of that crap. There's none of that BS that goes on a lot, unfortunately, in this sport. And we have great respect for one another. And if we do good, we all do good. If we don't do so good, we all are involved, and it's no particular body's fault. And we go on to say, okay, we're going to go on to the next one and do better. And that's what we build on. And I'm very proud of what we've done here at Henderson Racing in the last 7-8 years. And this team's got a great history. Race team started in like 1975 was the first Henderson Racing race car that raced at Kingsport in NASCAR Late Model Sportsman, which is now the Xfinity Series. So it's good stuff. And, I care about Parker and respect him for everything he is. He's a great young man. He's matured a lot. He's got great communication, does a great job on TV, does a great job on social media. He's really hard not to like. And we just appreciate him. And I know our owners, they would probably adopt him if the chance came along. That's how much they care for him. So it's a pretty good deal. It's pretty good stuff.
Chris, last but not least, my friend, we talked to Parker in Sonoma, and he said winning at Bristol would be like winning the Daytona 500 for this team. For you personally, what would it mean?
Yeah, same. It's just one of those things. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to win races in all the series of NASCAR racing, from late model stock car all the way up to Cup, and been with teams and been with many different drivers from A to Z as far as talent level and size of the teams, from Penske Racing to helping team, you know, back when Ed Whitaker had cars that's who I started with basically way back, and we had cars in a two-bay cinder block building behind Ed's house and won races out of that shop. But for it's just something that it gives you a feeling of, I'm not sure it's accomplishment or achievement, so to speak. It's just justification and kind of a, you know, the win at Mid-Ohio was part of that. It's like, okay, we have built something here that is relevant. We are relevant every week we go. We are part of the game. And to do it at Bristol would be like a culmination of everything we work for, you know. And we all know it's like you can say, okay, treat it as another race. It's just another race on the schedule. There's another one after this. There's this, that, and the other. There'll be another race at Bristol next year, la-di-da-da-da, and just cross your T's, dot your I's, do all the same things. Don't overdo. But, I mean, man, we're human. We can say all that, but it's still you're running the race that you want to win the most. If anybody on our team, any of us, I think Parker would say the same thing, but myself, the owners, the people in this area, if you ask us every year, so okay, if you got one race to win, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to win one race this year, and that's it. Where would it be? There would be no question. It'd be Bristol. It'd be Bristol in the fall. That's the race we want to win. And it's not going to change. To me, it would just be something that I could, you know, really cling to. I've won races at Bristol years back with Ed Whitaker team out of Bristol, Virginia. Again, we're talking Busch Grand National. And with, you know, Harry Gant, Morgan Shepherd won a race out of that shop. Ran some other good races down through the years. We won a race in 1989 out of this shop with Rick Wilson at Bristol in the same Busch Grand National series. And those times are just, yeah, they're the things that stick in your mind. You know, the things that you talk about, somebody, okay, well, what kind of success have you had? What's your favorite days or whatever? Those are the days. Those are the days that stick out, because it's something that's a, in my mind, my heart, it's just a justification and a like, okay, we've accomplished something that we all love. And to look around at the looks, the expressions of joy, happiness, satisfaction, gratification on the people's faces around me, that is the reward. It's like, okay, a big trophy's nice, a flag and all this and this, that, and other. You know, that's great. But to look around at the satisfaction and the joy that the people around me get, you know, from Parker to Charlie and Don Henderson and the guys on the crew and people that do this and people that do that, there's nothing to match it. There's just nothing to take that place, you know. And, yeah, to be honest with you, we'd rather win a race at Bristol than win at Daytona. I know a lot of people think you're crazy, but that's us. That's what it is.
It's going to be fun to watch. If you can't make it to the track, 9 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, FS1 for the Camping World Truck Series race at Bristol. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the program. I'll be sure to find you in Bristol to put a face to this voice. And good luck this weekend, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having us on. And, man, if you want to watch a good race, if you're looking to come to watch a good race, Thursday night at Bristol is that's your key. That's your answer. So, we love it. There'll be a good crowd there this weekend, I think, all weekend. The weather's going to be great. And, stop by a Food Country USA store on your way.
Definitely will, my friend. Chris Carrier, crew chief for the number 75 truck, joins the Front Stretch program with Brian Nolan.
Once again, big thanks to Chris Carrier for taking some time out of his morning and spending it with myself. Big thanks to Debbie Henderson Creasy as well for setting that up. Big thanks to Debbie, as always. She's one of the best in the PR game. One of the best as well, not only editing, but being a co-host. I mean, this guy is an absolute dog at behind the scenes. He doesn't get noticed a lot because he's behind the scenes, but he should because he is awesome at it. Mr. Mike Bachman does all the dirty work and never gets any of the credit. So I appreciate you, my dude. Bachman, let's dive into this upcoming race because it could be one of the most wildest races that we've seen in the past couple of years. The night race at Bristol. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be electric. Only one driver locked in. That is Christopher Bell. So where do you even want to start with this, my friend? I mean, I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are at a loss for words and have no expectation whatsoever other than the fact that it's going to be chaos. But there's a couple of things that I look at with this race, Brian, that I think are going to have the potential to come into effect. And that's really going to be interesting once these cars hit the track. The first is that it is the next gen car's debut on the actual surface of Bristol. Yes, we had the dirt race back in the spring, but this is going to be the first test of the actual track surface at Bristol. And one of the things, one of the narratives that has been, you know, on display with these short tracks is shifting. Are drivers going to potentially be shifting at Bristol this weekend? We don't know, but if they are, if they're going to have to shift at this track, buckle up, brother, because these guys are going to be gripping the wheel, you know, and it's going to be an absolute barn burner. I just don't know how else to put it. And drivers have been outspoken about, you know, how they don't like the idea of shifting, but at a track like Bristol, the high banks of Bristol, the high speeds we're going to be seeing, you know, guys are going to have to really be dialed in with that, even just with the, just the natural intensity of the first of the cutoff race. You know, the second being is the fact that Christopher Bell is the only driver locked in. And like we've said, anybody has the potential of getting knocked out this weekend. So the implications of non-playoff drivers getting these first two wins has just applied that much more pressure on this playoff field because they don't have that security of coming into this race and being like, okay, we don't necessarily need to be super aggressive. Just got to take care of things and, you know, use information to try and prepare for the round of 12. We don't have to go crazy, right? Well, that's not what's going to happen this weekend, man. Only Christopher Bell has that security of knowing. So with the implications of the non-playoff drivers winning these races, the pressure on all these guys is just that much more intensified. And like I said, it's just going to be a barn burner.
And the thing is, Bachman, I don't think people realize how mentally draining this will be physically and mentally. This 500 laps at Thunder Valley at the Coliseum, Bachman. I mean, especially with these cars, these guys are going to be drained. You see back in the early 2000s how it was hard. Some they didn't even have power steering. You got to wrestle this car around. And for 500 laps, we're going to be seeing some tired drivers at the end. And when you get tired drivers, you get tempers that are more than likely going to flare up. And I would not be surprised to see tempers flare up. Bachman, let's just dive in a couple more things before we give our race picks. For Bristol, what makes it so unique? Obviously, you're cutting speeds of 15 or 16, and there's been a big debate about how this racing is going to be. So kind of a two-part question here, and I think back to what I was reading all the way back in May with Jeff Gluck. He had 12 questions with Kyle Larson, and they were talking about, like, what the perfect track is for Larson, and he said, I'm going to read this verbatim, and I quote, but I feel like these next-gen cars, so far, they seem to struggle on short tracks, and I think Bristol is going to be really, really bad with it in September, and I thought, and I think Homestead will be better. You can read more about that in his 12 questions back in May on theathletic.com. But back to this, Bachman, I've heard drivers say that mainly because it's going to be so hard to pass that they're going to have to bump. And what happens with bumping, you're going to get some beating and banging and you're going to get some wreckage. So just how would you anticipate this race playing out? Drive wise, do you see it being tough to pass, which means just overall, which means it's going to be a little bit of beating the binging, kind of like the old Bristol that we've seen back in like 2005, 2006.
Yeah, that definitely seems like the direction that it's heading. That's what at least I've heard, just kind of overhearing some drivers and their expectations for this race this weekend. And, you know, Kyle Larson hit it right on the money there in that interview. And we've seen it from a fan's perspective and as an observer, most of these short tracks, it has been very difficult to pass. And the only real way is you got to make your own lane. You got to find your own way to get around the next guy in front of you. And Bristol is that one track that, whether it's hard to pass or not, using the chrome horn is inevitable, right? And again, just with everything surrounding this race, with the playoff implications, with just the idea that it's the Bristol night race and it is the next gen car, and this whole season has been crazy. You know, I think we'll see a lot of guys get greedy, especially if they're not able to, maybe in the first half, those first 300 laps or so, they're not able to get around guys. And it is very difficult to pass because as soon as those laps start ticking down, you start getting under 200, 150, and then you're in that final 100 lap shootout, depending on how this race goes. And especially if there aren't many cautions for that matter, guys are just going to be pushing the issue even more so. So again, I think that based on everything that we have seen from the way that the next gen car has performed on short tracks this year, I think that the narrative as it stands today is the fact that it is going to be tough to pass. Speeds are probably going to be very high and guys are going to have to get creative to make their own lane to get around the next guy in front of them, which is only going to make, you know, the viewing experience that much more sweeter. And it's going to make that, you know, riding in the cockpit and being behind the wheel that much more tougher.
Bachman, let's dive into our picks. We're going to give a pick for the win, and then we are going to give a pick on the four drivers eliminated after this race for the last race of the round of 16. You're the guest. You will go first. Who's going to be winning the upcoming race for the Bass Pro Shops night race at Bristol? And then who is going to be eliminated after this final race of the round of 16?
Yeah, so as much as I want to pick a non-playoff driver, I'm just not going to do it. But I do like Joey Logano this weekend. I think that Joey Logano is a pretty safe pick. He's finished top three in three of the last four Bristol night races. And that 22 team has the experience. Joey Logano has the veteran experience, you know, next to his name, and he's right behind there in Denny Hamlin in terms of their performance, you know, so far this playoffs. Yeah, he finished outside the top 15 at Kansas, but you know, Joey Logano's still very consistent and still shows a lot of great speed. So I think he's a safe pick. He's the guy that I'm going to take this weekend to find victory lane. And then as far as the playoff grid, I wouldn't be surprised if Kevin, I will say this, I'll preface with this. I would not be surprised if Kevin Harvick comes out and wins this thing. I just won't. But I don't have him moving on, unfortunately. Wow. Because it is a must win situation and I'm not picking him to win. Though I would not be shocked. So I have Kevin Harvick missing out. I also have a Stewart Haas teammate, Chase Briscoe, on the outside looking in. And then I will go with the two Austins in Austin Dillon and also rookie Austin Cindric. I was kind of back and forth on this between Cindric and also Suarez, but I like Daniel Suarez. I think that his experience at Bristol and what he could potentially do is just going to be a little bit greater than Austin Cindric. And depending on how this plays out, I just think that the playoff pressure might get to that two team a little bit more than the 99 team with Suarez. So I do have those four, Kevin Harvick, Chase Briscoe, Austin Dillon and Austin Cindric on the outside looking in?
For me, I'm going to go with the guys who got to win and get in, Bachman. Kevin Harvick's going to get the job done. The four group going to get their third win of the season and lock themselves into the playoffs. They have to win or else they are bye-bye. That being said, his teammate is going to unfortunately go bye-bye. Chase Briscoe eliminated. I'm going to go with Austin Dillon eliminated. I'm going Austin Cindric eliminated. I think Kyle Busch squeaks in. I'm going to go with Daniel Suarez to be eliminated. But don't be afraid if we see payback happen from anyone, whether it's Austin Dillon, whether it's Christopher Bell, whether it's Denny Hamlin to Ross Chastain. Denny Hamlin said that payback is going to be served when it matters most. And Chastain is not in danger per se, but he's not solidly comfortable. He's only 26 above the good. So if let's say he doesn't get any stage points, one and two, and they're close together with 10 or 20 laps to go, would not be surprised to see a little bit of a bump and run by the 11 or even by the three or by so many other drivers that Chastain's pissed off lately. Because let's be honest, Bachman, there's quite a bit of them.
There is certainly quite a bit of them, and there is a lot of guys on this list that could definitely usher some payback from Ross Chastain. But that is definitely going to be another interesting narrative to follow, is if anybody does decide to take Ross Chastain out, or at least move him enough to the point where he will be under the cut line. That is certainly not out of the question. If there's one track that is a perfect opportunity to do so, it's Bristol. Because whether you're a lap down, whether you're on the lead lap, just you're going to be next to the guy. So Ross Chastain is going to potentially have his hands full, especially if things shake out the way they do. I would think that it would be much sweeter for some of these guys, especially like a Denny Hamlin, to usher that payback a little bit down the line in the playoffs. But hey, it's a cutoff race. It's Bristol, baby. Fireworks are going to be on display Saturday night. So that's another narrative that could absolutely change this playoff picture.
It is Bristol, baby. Words could not be more true right there. Bachman, stay right there. Let's wave this checkered flag and wrap up shop.
Checkered flag, here I come. Oh, no!
Wrapping up shop here on this week of September the 12th, 2022. With an absolute stallion of a co-host, Mr. Mike Bachman. Bachman, it's time for the favorite segment that we do at the end of the program every single week. Our final thoughts, whatever you want to rant, rave, or anything in between. Now is the time to do so. So without further ado, it's all yours.
Well, first of all, if anybody ever needs a little self-esteem confidence boost, just write to Brian Nolan and get yourself on front of the podcast.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I mean, that's first and foremost, brother. but number two, non-playoff drivers, I said this earlier, but I'll say it again. We hear you. We see you. We recognize you. And you know what? We freaking love you, because going two for two, mm-hmm. Erik Jones, Bubba Wallace, you guys are making these playoffs so much more fun for us as a fan, because you have the lack of security for all these drivers. It's going to be on full display this weekend. And honestly, for these non-playoff drivers, it's just such an awesome thing to see, because in years past, Brian, I feel like there's at least been this gap between the playoff drivers and the non-playoff drivers. You'll always see, you know, like on the ticker leaderboard, you'll have those guys shaded in yellow that you know are in the playoffs, and it's just loaded with guys in the top 10. Not necessarily the case here in 2022. And, you know, circumstances happen. It was one thing for all these playoff drivers to have so many individual issues at Kansas, but, you know, it still speaks volumes to the fact that these non-playoff drivers, they might not be running for a championship, but they could damn well still run up front and outrun these guys that are running for a championship. So they are almost kind of killing two birds with one stone and showing us that, yeah, I might not be in the playoffs, but look, I could still win races, and you better watch out, because next year we're coming with a vengeance. And also at number two, we're just adding more pressure to all these guys running for the chip. So we're really going to make you work now to put together good races. They're not going to come easy. It's not, you know, it's not concrete. It's not banked that these drivers are going to make victory lane just because you're in the playoffs. So non-playoff drivers, we hear you. We love you. Thank you for just continuing the parody of this season. And again, NASCAR fans, just bask in it, because we don't know if it's going to happen next year. We don't know if it's ever going to happen again. So I'll say that, and I'll say it every time I'm on the front of this podcast, bask in it now, because 2022 has been it. And you talk about dogs. This has been a dog of a season. So take it all in, guys, because it's really something special.
To say that NASCAR is basking in glory as Bristol is coming up would be an understatement. 15 drivers still not locked into the round of eight. Who is going to come out of it? I got no idea. I am so excited for this. You have two champions of the sport out of the playoff. You have young gun. You have drivers from Kyle Larson to Chase Elliott to Kevin Harvick that are some are in, some are out, and some are in between. And the storylines are plethora and plenty. And you know what? There's going to be hurt feelings, and there's going to be hurt drivers at the end. Not literally hurt drivers, but you know what I mean. Anyway, at the end of 500 laps at Bristol on Saturday, and you know what? It's going to be awesome. So if you can't be there, watch it on the USA channel. We're not getting paid for this, but you know what? It's because we just know it's going to be an absolute barn burner of a show. Chaos factor is at an all-time 11 on a scale of 1 to 10. It's going to be crazy. Feelings are going to be hurt, and I'm going to be right there for it, and I am super excited. It's going to be fun, and let's create some more chaos. Once again, big thanks to Chris Carey for coming on the show. Bachman, you're an absolute dog, my friend. Thank you so much. What are you cooking up on our Twitter feed? You've been doing some great audiograms. I didn't even know what those were at first, and I looked and I was like, oh my gosh, that is an absolute baller move right there, my brother. So what are you cooking up? And then plug your socials, my dude.
Well, we are definitely trying to promote the podcast first and foremost, getting some extra content out there from shows like this, from interviews like you'll hear today. So be sure to follow all of our accounts at Front Stretch, specifically on Twitter, but also our YouTube channel. Go subscribe to that. We really appreciate all of the support. But yeah, just gearing up for playoff season, man. We're here, and Front Stretch has got a lot of really exciting content plans in the works. So if you want to see, you just got to follow us there on Twitter, YouTube. We're there, and we've got some great stuff in the works. As far as my personals, you can follow me on Twitter at MV Bachman. That's MVBACHMANN. Talking NASCAR, talking NFL, talking sports. If you care to listen, that's the place to find me. So Brian, it is an honor and a pleasure as always, my friend. Love doing this with you. Thank you so much.
You're one of my favorite humans just in general, because you love sports and you're just a good human. So I appreciate the fellowship and the friendship that we have, my dude. Once again, if someone's drinking, every time I say the word dog, I feel bad for you. You may need to go to a hospital ASAP, because Bachman is literally an absolute dog. So big thanks to him. Big thanks to everybody that supports the program. I've done a lot of podcasts in my life, but I can fully say I'm having the time of my life doing this one. It's fun. I'm being myself. I'm being authentic. And for those that see me outside of the track, you'll literally see I'm like this when I'm not recording. And you can ask Bachman, Michael Massey, Jared, anyone, even our boss, Mr. Tom Bowles. I'm literally like this every single time the camera is not on. So I'm having a great time at the Brian Nolan. Find all of my info there at Front Stretch, frontstretch.com. We're going to have so much content. Michael Massey and I are going to be on the ground doing some work at Bristol. It's going to be absolute chaos, and it's going to be wild. It's going to be absolutely wild. Once again, at the Brian Owen, at Front Stretch. Bachman, thank you so much. For Mr. Mike Bachman, for everybody at the sports program, I am Brian Owen. Thank you so much. Next week, Mr. Michael Massey is going to be joining the program, and we're going to be having an interview that I conducted live from Bristol next week. For Bachman, I'm Nolan. We out of here. Talk to you next week.